Welcome to the next episode of IP in a Pod, Charles Russell Speechley's IP podcast. I'm Charlotte Judy, Head of Brand Protection, and I'm joined by my colleagues Peter Bird and David Fifield.
Hi.
Hi.
So we thought for today's podcast we'd take a bit of a break from the seemingly never-ending discussions around Brexit, turn to something a little bit more light-hearted, Megxit. Specifically the Sussex Royal brand and the trademark issues around it. As I'm sure we're all aware, there's been lots of press coverage about this. Lots of people have got very excited about Harry and Meghan's departure from the royal family, if that's what it even is. Some of the coverage has been quite accurate and interesting, but quite a lot of it has been quite confused or in some cases simply wrong. So we thought we would give a helpful trademark lawyer's take on it. A brief timeline of what's happened is that Harry and Meghan launched the brand in April 2019 on their Instagram account, and then following that in June 2019 they applied for two UK trademarks, one for Sussex Royal and one for Sussex Royal, the foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. They filed both trademarks quite broadly, covering a host of goods and services. They followed it with an IR, an international registration, through the Madrid system in December, and under that they designated Australia, Canada, the EU and the US. The UK marks were published on the 20th of December. Then in January they made the announcement that they were going to step back from the royal family, which no doubt prompted lots of behind the scenes discussions about what name they could use. And finally, on the 25th of February, they withdrew the Sussex Royal trademarks, having confirmed that they will not be using the Sussex Royal brand. Interestingly, in the meantime, there was lots of notices of threatened opposition, which third parties can file to show that their intention to oppose the trademarks. Unfortunately, we'll probably never get to see what those oppositions were now that they've been withdrawn, but it's a tricky area and would no doubt have been quite interesting, which helpfully segues into something that Charlotte's going to talk about, the use of royal and royal emblems in trademarks in the UK.
Thank you, Peter. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex website, sussexroyal.com, refers to their spring 2020 transition because they formally leave active service of the royal family at the end of this month, March 2020. And their website stated that they had decided to drop use of the word royal due to specific UK government rules. And I thought it would be useful to discuss what those are, and then David will talk about use of royal in other jurisdictions. In relation to trademarks, the UK Trademark Act prohibits use of certain items related to the monarchy, such as royal arms, royal crowns, royal flags, and certain words and letters. And another part of the same act prevents the registration, so use and registration of certain items related to the royal family are governed by the Trademark Act. And you can't register those items unless you have consent from the Queen or, in certain circumstances, other members of the royal family. And the issue really is to prevent third parties who have nothing to do with the royal family or don't have their consent from creating an association with them, suggesting that in some way their goods or service have royal patronage or authorised by them. And presumably this all became part of the negotiations between the royal family and the Duke and Duchess. But the UK IPO provides some quite useful guidance about what they think about the word royal, because the Act is obviously quite formulaic, but it doesn't provide much by way of real-world examples. So the UK IPO guidance is that royal may indicate royal patronage for certain high-quality items, such as good-quality porcelain and luxury foods, maybe certain exhibitions, and of course charitable services that the royal family are very closely associated with. And that extends further to other high-value products or where there's a public interest. And examples that are given are events in particular where the royal family are likely to be associated. So if you had the Royal Cornwall Agricultural Show, then particularly because of Prince Charles and the Duchy of Cornwall, there might be seen to be some association. So if it had nothing to do with the royal family, then that would be a reason for objecting.
So it's not necessarily the use of the word royal, it's the use of wording that would lead to a confused association.
Exactly. So there aren't any sort of firm lines on this. It definitely depends on the mark and the context. And marks such as royal flush, because of the association with card games, probably would be accepted for most things. And the UKIPO give guidance that everyday items would probably be acceptable in a trademark application. So they give examples of insurance and t-shirts. Some of those items were in the Royal Sussex trademark applications. T-shirts certainly were. There's obviously a different practice when it comes to company names and what's acceptable in a company name registration. But from a trademark point of view and what you can use and register, very much depends on the circumstances. And any association with the royal family is going to be a problem. This is an unusual area because they are members of the royal family up until a point.
And assumedly the Royal Sussex as a trademark inevitably creates, whatever it's registered for, inevitably will probably create an association, because especially at the moment when they've just been named the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, so I imagine any third party would need, or anyone making an application for this would need some kind of permission, wouldn't they?
Yes, I think so. I think when it's this high profile, it is their name effectively. You know, Sussex is their official title. So without the Queen's permission, then they ought not to be using and registering. But of course, that's not necessarily the position everywhere. And on their website, they mentioned that there wasn't any jurisdiction by the monarchy or cabinet office over the use of the word royal overseas.
Yes, which the statement really stood out to me, and I do wonder whether they ran it past their trademark lawyers before including it in their transition statement, because it's not entirely accurate. Because, of course, the UK is not the only country which recognises the Queen as the head of state. And many of the countries which do still recognise the Queen as the head of state include restrictions on the registrability of trademarks and the use of marks as part of their business names, that comprise or feature words or representations, symbols, flags or emblems that are associated with the UK's monarchy without the consent of the Queen or the consent of her representative in the country concerned. So, for example, this includes New Zealand, where there's actually a specific prohibition on the use of the word royal in a business name or a registrability of a trademark featuring the word royal without the consent of the Queen or the Governor General of New Zealand, who's unlikely to act without the Queen's consent. It also includes Canada, where Harry and Meghan are currently living. Canada's laws closely mirror those in the UK. So again, depending on the context in which royal is used in the mark, the Queen's consent might be required to register it as a trademark or to use it in the course of trade. And even in countries where the UK monarchy doesn't have any control over use of terms, it doesn't mean that you'd necessarily be free to use the word royal in your trademark. So, for example, there are a number of other countries around the world who still have monarchies, and they themselves may restrict the use of terms such as royal that might suggest an endorsement by or association with their own royal family. In addition, many countries are party to a Paris Convention, and all countries which sign up to it have to include within their trademark laws prohibitions on the registration of use of marks that feature the flags or emblems of states that are party to a Paris Convention, as well as the names and emblems of international intergovernmental organisations without the consent of those states or organisations. Now, although from a quick look, it doesn't look like the UK has registered anything under the Paris Convention that might prevent the use of Sussex Royal, it could prevent the use of other images and emblems and flags that might be associated with the UK monarchy. And even where a country doesn't have specific laws prohibiting the use of terms suggesting an association with a monarchy, most jurisdictions include an absolute ground for refusal of registration of a trademark if a mark comprises something that might mislead or deceive or otherwise confuse the public. This includes, for example, the European Union and all of its member states. typically this ground is relied on in cases where a mark may lead mislead consumers as to the nature, quality or geographic origin of the goods or services provided under the mark. So for example, if someone tried to register a mark for Scottish clothing and the company was based in Ireland and was producing all the clothing in Ireland, that might be considered to mislead consumers about the origin of the goods concerned. And this could potentially be relied on to reject a mark which inappropriately suggested endorsement by the monarchy.
From their website statement, it does seem that it's not necessarily the case that you are free to use royal everywhere and anywhere. And then, in fact, there are many territories where there could be restrictions on both use and registration.
Mm. And indeed, if they were to proceed with this brand, which they're not, they would have grounds probably to object or to lodge observations with offices around the world for other people trying to register Sussex Royal on the basis that it's going to be misleading.
It's interesting, actually, that you talk about third parties. There seems to have been something of an explosion of third-party applications for Sussex Royal since around about the 9th or 10th of January, which was when Harry and Meghan announced their departure from active royal family life. And when I last looked, there were nearly 40 applications, and 38 of those didn't relate to Harry and Meghan at all. They were third parties in various territories all over the world, including Canada and the US, where you need to have an intention to use when you file, and a number of other territories, which made me consider really whether they should have perhaps retained their trademark applications or thought about them, you know, this possibility of third parties taking such steps before they filed, or if they're happy to rely on provisions elsewhere that because they're not part of the royal family and they're not the Sussex Royals, that perhaps they'll be refused in due course.
Yeah, because of course now they've lost this, well, they never had the trademark, but assuming it would have reached registration, it's a very, one of the key benefits of having a registered trademark is that you can use it to stop other people using or registering your brand to take advantage of it. And actually, it struck me that withdrawing a trademark is rarely a good idea unless you're required to under some kind of contract or settlement that you've arranged, because you have a 5-year period in which to put it to use, and perhaps a sensible thing would have been to retain it for now, or even to assign it to someone associated with the royal family so that they could use it, because they've paid their fees to register the mark. You'd have thought someone would have tried to keep it in order to use it to enforce, or at least to have it as a deterrent on the register for the future.
I wonder if they just simply did not anticipate the level of interest in that trademark, and that so many enterprise and individuals would look to file once their departure was announced. And it's certainly problematic. It's not ideal that there are all these third-party rights. I noticed that it had been reported in several newspapers online that they still had an EU trademark for, I think it was quoted as toiletries, jewellery and beer. But having looked into that further, the only one I could find was in the name of an unrelated third party. I assume they're unrelated. They're an Italian individual who filed other trademarks in the past, so it doesn't seem that they're being used as a vehicle to maintain Sussex Royal. And I thought if a journalist is confused as to whether a trademark is theirs or not, then there are possibly going to be instances of consumer confusion caused by all these trademark filings, and no doubt some of them will be put to use somewhere in the world.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, yeah. It'll be interesting to see whether any of them actually reach registration.
I think that's something to watch out for. And the interesting thing as well is what Harry and Meghan intended to do with their trademark.
Well, I did want to touch on the specification that they filed, which is one of the aspects that got quite a lot of media attention. As I'm sure our listeners will know, the two sort of sides of the trademark is firstly the trademark itself, in this case Sussex Royal, but also the specification, which is the list of goods and services which are intended to be covered by the mark. The specification is important for so many reasons. It's supposed to cover what you're intending to do with the mark, but when it comes to enforcing your mark, the more similar the goods and services in your specification is to the activities of the person you're trying to stop, the more likely you will be successful. There's also a requirement in UK law that any applicant must have a genuine intention to use the registration across the breadth of the specification. And indeed, if they don't after the first 5 years or in any subsequent 5 year period, the marks can and often are attacked on the basis of non-use. So here they've applied for such a range of things, including printed matter and textbooks, clothing, including bandanas and pyjamas. They've covered campaigning, charitable fundraising, education, entertainment. So some of these seem obvious. You know, it's quite obvious to see that the royals will be campaigning. I think their trust has quite a charitable angle to it. But some of them seem less so. I mean, I'm not sure that I can see them selling pencils or T-shirts branded Royal Sussex.
Well, that's an interesting point because online I saw a reference to the couple complaining about the trademark, whether they did or not, I don't know, but it was in reference to the fact that they didn't want to be in the business of selling T-shirts and pencils. But both items were covered by their applications, which just make you wonder why they were there and whether there's a bad faith element to that if they covered things that they had no intention to use on.
Yeah, and for anyone who's really interested in this, they can listen to our first podcast in this series about the recent Skykick judgment, which discusses this in much more detail, but it's very relevant here.
It is, and it's not, I mean, Skykick tells us that it's not bad faith just to cover goods or services where there's no intention to use them. So they would have been fine had they retained the applications, but that comment had still come to light. But it could be bad faith when, at the time of filing the trademark application, there was an additional element present to suggest that they had taken that step in anything that's other than in accordance with honest practices. And that leaves that quite open to what else would be required. But just filing for Sussex Royal on its own for T-shirts and pencils when you have no intention to sell or use on those items isn't in itself bad faith.
But interestingly, there was an application in April 2019 which was refused, and there has been commentary that this was by another third party, and there has been commentary that the only reason that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex filed this trademark was because they've seen what other people might do to mess around with the brand. So actually, there is perhaps an argument that they filed this defensively to stop other people from using it. And perhaps that, coupled with a statement from them saying that they're not going to use the trademark across the breadth, starts to encroach on the bad faith area. I don't know. I think you'd have to look at all the evidence on the whole there, but it's an interesting line of thought.
I think so. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, they file for next and what their strategy is for protecting that mark in the UK and abroad. Well, I think that's the end of our discussion on Megxit. Thank you very much for listening.
Yes, thank you.